It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
And joining us from Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, Cecil Harvell. Hi, Cecil. How are you?
Good morning, Ben.
All right. And Wes Collins is coming in the studio as we speak here this morning. So what are we talking about today, Cecil?
Ben, let's continue to talk about what happens when our citizenry dies without a will. Part three, I think
this is. Right.
Okay. It's a very important subject, Ben, because we just see so much, the death of a loved one is a complex and emotional and psychologically challenging time for all of us. When you do not have direction as to your assets, you can only imagine, Pandora's box. I mean, it's just wide open. So having a last will and testament is critically important. And I want to also say that having an up-to-date last will and testament is so very important. Yesterday, one of our associates, Sam Morris, who primarily works with Wes, posted a blog, and it's on our website this morning as well as on the Facebook page. And it's about the elective share and there's so many ways to frame up that subject. But the way that he framed it up, which I thought was nice, was that he talked about, John prepares a will, last will and testament, and then John gets married.
Right.
And then John doesn't update his last will and testament. And his last will and testament, as one would expect, leaves his assets to his children from his first marriage. But now, of course, he's remarried and he doesn't get his will updated. Now what happens? So even though John has a will, there are issues that evolve because of the fact that his will is not up to date. So we not only need a last will and testament, we highly recommend it, of course, as one would expect, but you also need to look at it carefully from time to time and have it updated. Wes and I, we say about every 5 to 7 years, don't we, Wes?
Yeah, in that time frame. And then obviously if their life changes.
Right.
And what are we talking about there? You know, we're talking about, you know, deaths, marriages, divorces.
Also moving to another state.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Although the documents, of course, that we prepare are going to be enforceable in any state. But, you know, when you're talking about some of the statutory type documents like power of attorney, healthcare, those are really statutorily driven. If they're going to be used in another jurisdiction, another state, then it's best to have them prepared under the laws of that particular state.
Right. Right.
But, you know, normally when we see powers of attorney, let's say from New York or wherever it may be, another state, Florida, South Carolina, normally those fit into, you know, what our statutes require here.
But still, life changes are worth looking at.
It's just a perfect fit if it's under North Carolina law. And that's, we like, you know, perfection. You know, we talk about also other changes in people's lives, birth, like a birth of a child, grandchild. Obviously, that's an important issue to, you know, revisit the will on, but a well-drafted will is going to kind of open that class and keep it open anyway. So we normally use terms like, you know, per stirpes, which means basically through lineal descent. We use other legal mechanisms in order to make sure that in the event that there is a birth, that particular new child or grandchild, excuse me, is captured and not left out in the cold.
Right.
So, but we certainly have seen, you know, wills, you know, kind of your, will in a box, doc in a box kind of thing and some of the online things where there's a failure to recognize those type of things. And it, you know, a lot of times those documents are so limited to, what's going on right now.
Right.
I mean, you see a will that comes across our desk, the person's died and it's dealt with the way things were 5, 6, 7 years ago. But it doesn't address the fact that, my goodness, we have another child, you know, there's another grandchild or there was a death or those type of things. So a well-drafted will is going to contemplate, you know, that those kind of things. So many times when Cecil and I sit down with people and talk with them and get kind of our standard questions,
right?
You know, family, assets, all that. I would say many times, I say just about every time, mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yes.
Right. I didn't think about what happens if my husband dies first or mm-hmm. what happens if one of my children dies, where that part of my estate is to go, those type of things. Well, it's our job to think about that and kind of make the client think mm-hmm. about that so that we cover those contingencies. Otherwise, we could have a really bad, you know, or unintended outcome. But I would say, yeah, 5-7 years is a good time to do a refresher.
Okay.
And Ben, of course, when you die without any document whatsoever, which mm-hmm. is what we're talking about here, then of course there can be no expectation at all that the document didn't speak to a particular issue. One of those issues, for instance, are minor children. Any well-drafted will is going to have a holdback provision for minor children so that mm-hmm. if for some reason one of the grandchildren inherits under the will, or under the estate rather, that there would be, some guidance as to what happens to mm-hmm. the share of the minor child. When you die without a will, there obviously is no guidance. That's going to require the opening of, you know, a trust, a mm-hmm. guardianship, if you will, with the public court system to monitor the estate of the portion that is for the minor child. What we see again and again and again and again, Ben, and there's a good example of it, minor children.
Mm-hmm.
Opening up an estate for a minor child with the clerk of court, having that monitored every year, filing accountings every year, having to go to the clerk of court if there's anything unusual to be paid for out of the ordinary, depending mm-hmm. on what the discretion is. Because again, we don't have a document.
Right.
That leads the family. There's just an asset base out there for a minor child. You can imagine now rather than the minor child benefiting, there's going to be expense, there's going to be filing fees, there's going to be a bond, mm-hmm. there's going to be a lawyer fees, accounting fees, and all of those things are going to affect the amount of money that is there for the minor child. Now, that's just one example. We talked about early on about just who in the world is going to be the administrator of this estate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's several children. There's more than one choice.
Right.
And so right out of the gate, one of the things that so many times happens is just a contested issue as to just who will be the administrator of the estate.
Mm-hmm. So back to the minor child issue, I think that's really important. A lot of people don't know that, you know, mm-hmm. in the event that there's anything that's left to a minor child, it could be life insurance outside the will. It could be, you know, assets left under the will. It could be a portion of the house,
mm-hmm.
you know, it could be whatever. They don't realize that, you know, that asset has to go to the clerk of court to be held by the clerk of court until the person turns 18 and then it's dispersed out. In addition to all of the 5 or 6 or 7 things that Cecil mentioned about the problems with that and the kind of the headaches that come along with that failure to plan, I would add that you also end up in a situation where you lack control of that completely.
Right.
Because the clerk is simply going to they're going to invest it in a very conservative mm-hmm. asset. You have no control over that. Like a CD, something like that, that's just, you know, very conservative because they can't take a risk of any loss, but there's not going to be much performance of, mm-hmm. of that asset either. And then you're not in a situation where you can have from the grave a little more control as it relates to how those funds are to be used.
There's no real trustee at
right.
this point.
Well,
there isn't. And who in the world would advocate for an amount of money and maybe even any amount of money going to an 18-year-old?
Right.
You know, that's
by lump sum
in stanter. Here it is, a big mm-hmm. check. Okay. Mm-hmm. One installment. All of it to the penny.
So the alternative, mm-hmm. like Cecil mm-hmm. was mentioning, is that a well-drafted will is going to have that holdback trust where you decide who the trustee is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
This could be, you know, this could be one of your siblings. It could be, you know, someone that you, a friend, someone you trust, you know, someone that's in the family, someone who knows what may be going on with this particular minor child. You know, then you have provisions in the trust as it relates to what the funds can be used for, normally education,
mm-hmm.
medical expenses, health
right.
maintenance, welfare support, you know,
right.
those type things. and just the frustration that would come along with the those assets having to pass through the clerk without having any control, that's all addressed because you did it in your will. If you mm-hmm. don't have a will, mm-hmm. There's no holdback trust. It's just going to go to the clerk until the person turns 18. So that's one of, right. my goodness, lots and lots of reasons why it's important to have these type documents
right.
in place.
Right.
For instance, Ben, we just get into such quagmires. We've mentioned on the program before that now the clerks of court are requiring a signed receipt relative to the heirs of the estate with regard to tangible personal property,
uh-huh.
that they are satisfied as heirs of the estate that the furniture, the jewelry, the china, mm-hmm. the things in the house, the golf clubs, have all been distributed to their satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, suppose one of those heirs is a minor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Suppose there has to be the sign off of the minor in other areas of the estate, such as the sale of the real property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Again, if the minor is an heir, then the minor is going to hold an interest potentially in the land, the home, the mm-hmm. house, the farm, whatever the case might be. And the signature of the 12-year-old is going to be needed. Well, obviously, we know that we cannot have a document is not legally enforceable signed by a minor.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have the appointment of a legal guardian. And all of that would be within the auspices and the guidance of the clerk of court, which is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that we lawyers then are spending half of a day or two-thirds of a day with the clerk of court getting approval on the sale of that property.
When it could have been handled.
When it could have just been handled by the executor of the mm-hmm. estate under a valid last will and testament.
Okay, more to come in a moment. If you have questions, you can call in right now, 247-7282 with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins. You can go online at harvellandcollins.com and listen to past shows or call for an appointment at 726 I forgot the number.
9050.
I should know that by
it's
now.
It's only been 15
years. That's right. 726-9050. And I call for your appointment with Harvell and Collins. We'll have more to come in a moment. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, as we take a look at your legal life, especially if you do not have a will and one passes away in your family, and it's, boy, it's a mess. After that,
it is. And Ben, you know what all of us have in common
mm-hmm.
Is the fact that we do not want there to be excessive delay in the settlement of our estate.
Right.
Most estates now are able to get settled easily within, say, a 6 to 9 month time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I say that, I certainly do not mean that everything just is on hold for six. Did I say weeks or months? I meant to say months.
Okay, good.
6 to 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
3 months is the statute of limitations that is mm-hmm. set forth in the newspaper of the county in which we die that sets forth the time period for the creditors to
right.
present their claim. There's 3 months right there. But immediately, within a week of death, folks are closing out accounts,
mm-hmm.
transferring the automobiles,
mm-hmm.
maybe listing the property for sale, the lands
right.
for sale. I mean, it's not that I'm saying that from 3 to 6 months there's no activity. I'm just saying before we can put before the court a final accounting,
mm-hmm.
we're probably going to be at the 6 to 9 month category in most estates. Some linger further than that, but only because of the fact that they may have some tax filings
mm-hmm.
that are necessary, maybe an income tax return for the estate, such things as that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But generally speaking, an estate will move without a lot of delay and without excessive kinds of cost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's always some cost, isn't there? That famous statement out
sure.
there. There's no free lunch.
Right.
But the bottom line is they're very reasonable. When you die without a will,
mm-hmm.
it's Katie bar the door. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, in terms of time and in terms of expense, because many of the heirs of the estate, when they're when there is no document of control, the last will and testament, they, of course, feel that they have to each have legal representation.
Mm-hmm.
There are more lawyers usually involved, and there certainly is more, it is more time intensive because
right.
of the court involvement.
Yeah. Putting out a fire is a lot harder to do.
Correct. That's right.
When it's raging like that.
Right.
Okay, so... You mentioned about Wes. You had mentioned about Sturpee's allocation
right,
of
right.
fund of assets, and that's generally in a well-drafted will. But that's not always the case, is it? I mean, there's some other means that sometimes are determined when there's no will.
Yeah, actually, you know, when you talk about per Sturpee's, that's kind of the logical way that folks mm-hmm. would want assets to pass in the event that there's a death. You know, before they pass.
Right.
Like, for example, you know, in the event a parent's child dies and has children, the grandchildren of the person, the testator, mm-hmm. the person who signed the will, then in most cases, that testator is going to want that deceased child's share to then pass down to the grandchildren. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4 grandchildren, however many
right.
children this deceased child has. That's through lineal descent. That term per stirpes makes sure that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, when we're talking about, you know, I have two children, I leave my assets, you know, one half to John, one half to Jane. John
right.
dies. People get confused about this sometimes. We normally don't leave that asset that would go to John
mm-hmm.
to John's wife.
Right.
Instead of to John's children is mm-hmm. normally per stirpes through lineal descent. People get, you know, confused about that because, you know, but what we normally explain with regard to that is that, you know, in the event that you die, John's not living, John's spouse is living, then, you know, you don't have any crystal ball about what's going to happen with John's spouse.
Right.
I mean,
could be remarrying soon.
Right. I mean, yeah. you're leaving half of your estate to her.
Mm-hmm.
She remarries. Maybe she remarries someone with children. You know, all of a sudden, you know, we've got a Brady Bunch situation going mm-hmm. on, and half of your estate is going to, or maybe a quarter or more than your estate is going to someone you don't even know.
She dies without a will.
Right. Yeah, that gets.
Okay. Well,
and that happens
in intestate law in North Carolina, as we discussed last week, and I'm not trying to interrupt Wes. I want him to go back, but does not include stepchildren.
Right.
Right. Only natural children.
Yeah.
So, you know, she takes the estate of John, okay, and mm-hmm. then she then dies before she then makes out a valid last will and testament, leaving assets back to the children. So, yes, it's a problem.
Right. So, normally through lineal descent per stirpes is what we see.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of times we get the question, well, but they have, you know, two children.
Mm-hmm.
And if their daddy dies, my son, I want the wife, their mother, to mm-hmm. have the money to take care of them. Well, that's where the trust comes in.
That's right. That's right. That's
in the event they're minors, we've got it right in the will where it pours into the trust, and maybe the trustee of that trust for those minor children is, in fact, the mother. And in many cases, it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But that ensures that that inheritance stays through lineal descent and stays with our, you know, our mm-hmm. bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to potentially going off our bloodline to people we don't even know.
Right.
So these are things that through, exactly. That is what the default is if you don't have a will per capita at each generation,
mm-hmm.
not per stirpes. And that's basically a division of at each generation you divide it equally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's say there's two children, a half,
right.
if one has died, then that one half may be divided. You know, is to
right.
the grandchildren,
right.
maybe a quarter, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have five grandchildren, they get that half and it's split. So it doesn't always end up in a through lineal descent division.
And once again, becomes a mess.
That's right. Yep.
All right. All right. We're going to have more to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, again, online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back here at Coastal Daybreak. We're talking about what happens when you die without a will and the state law takes over.
Correct. Yeah. And, of course, Ben, just we've got just a minute or two just to review again. Unlike what we would expect in the state of North Carolina, the dictate of the law when you die without a will, of course, is that it is not true that all of the assets pass to the surviving spouse.
Mm-hmm.
If there's only one child, then they generally split the estate half and half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is a general rule. There's some off the top numbers,
right?
But they generally split the estate half and half.
Mm-hmm.
That's very different than the mom and pop will, where I leave everything to my wife or husband and then to my children. If there's two or more children, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
They generally split everything a third to the spouse and mm-hmm. 2/3 to the children.
So, people are also surprised about
surprised by that when there are two or more children. The mm-hmm. children then take 2/3. The surviving spouse takes 1/3. Again, this is good information for our listeners to hear. You need to have an up-to-date last will and testament, but more importantly, seek some legal advice on this. Lay mm-hmm. out your facts and circumstances and have a document that molds to your particular objectives and
mm-hmm.
your desires with regard to your assets. Critically, critically important, Ben. And then, of course, always look at the designations of your beneficiaries and how your accounts happen to be registered.
Mm-hmm.
A good lawyer, that is the second part of the equation in every single file. You have to look, you can do the document all day long, but if you've got account registrations out there, PODs, TODs, joint mm-hmm. with right of survivorship, beneficiary designations. If you've got those and they're inconsistent with what your estate plan is saying, then, you know, you've got a real problem. Both
right.
have to be coordinated, particularly this day and age where so many financial institutions are encouraging the POD or the TOD or the joint with right of survivorship. You can hardly get through a meeting with a financial advisor
right.
or institution without them putting those forms in front of you to sign.
Hmm.
And many times they're inconsistent with what the estate planning objectives would happen to be for the client.
So once again, it's incumbent that people do some planning ahead, right?
Yeah.
And take care of these matters. Although
yeah.
otherwise you end up litigating it, right?
Well, yeah, yeah, it can be. It's just things can be so much more fluid upon the death if in the event that there's just that thought before the death and
mm-hmm.
the thought going into the document. In the event that doesn't happen, then many cases we're just trying to unravel problems.
Yeah, and really, and then once you go down that line, then you're talking about more time, more money, more delay. So
that's right.
There you go. All right, take advantage of the opportunity here on Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning. Go back and listen to past shows at HartValleyCollins.com and call for that appointment at 252-726-9050. They're at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City for Hart Valley Collins Attorneys of Law.